Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And my very special guest today is Guy McPherson. Guy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Thanks for having me on.
I'm very glad to have you here. You come very highly recommended. I'd like to know why. Would you be able to explain just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
It's inexplicable that I'm highly recommended. Apparently, you're talking to the wrong class of people. I'm a professor emeritus at the University of Arizona. I left active service at the university 4.5 years ago, in May of 2009, at the age of 49. And I've been studying climate science for about 30 years. And now most of what I do is organize and synthesize research put out by other climate scientists and update the public through various means on the direction and history of climate change.
So would you be what they call and demonize as a climate denier, even though you don't deny that there's a climate?
Oh, no, I'm by no means a climate change denier. Most people have me in the far other end of the spectrum. I think we're headed for near-term human extinction as a result of climate change, and I don't think there's anything we can do at this point to avoid that fate. So most people say I'm worse than deniers because I don't point out that we should be, you know, driving Priuses to try to extend our run. I think it's too late.
Yeah, well, I've always found the Prius one quite a great irony, because electric cars send off a whole lot of electrical signals and magnetic fields and so on and so forth that cause cancer. So that'll teach you to save the environment.
Well, it's worse than that, anyway. Too. the energy that goes into a Prius is far greater than the energy required to make a Hummer, for example. And so you have to drive a Prius for a really long time before you have a net return on the energy investment. Those batteries are just hugely expensive in terms of the energy input.
It's just freaking marketing, isn't it? Now, is that one of your assessments? It is mine that climate change, and indeed allegedly trying to fight it, is merely just now a marketing ploy so that certain people can make money, even though humanity is going to die anyway.
I think there's a spectrum, a continuum, and that there certainly are people who are promoting the idea that we need to take certain actions so that we can mitigate the climate change damage, and most of those recommendations are ending up making people a lot of money. So there's a lot of greenwashing going on. I also think there's a lot of people who are pretty ignorant and who are captivated and captured by culture, and so they're just doing the things that sound like they make a little sense. So recycling, for example, what's not to like about recycling? So I see various
Your webcam appears to have gone off there. If you could quickly reset it, that'd be nice. But yeah, I agree on the recycling thing. You know what the bad thing is about recycling? It doesn't actually get recycled, and it gets shipped all the way to fucking China to basically be buried in a lot of cases, or at least the New Zealand garbage does anyway.
Well, right, and it's, again, there's a broad spectrum of outcomes there as well. Some recyclables actually get recycled, and a lot don't, and it's just highly variable. It depends on where you're at and how committed various people are to doing various things. But bear in mind, too, that, for example, recycling paper almost always takes way more energy than cutting second and third and fourth growth timber to turn it into paper. So it's sort of a zero-sum game. In addition,
which in itself... Which in itself actually costs a lot more energy than, say, a similar quantity of hemp.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And not to mention that recycling is the third R. Remember, we've known about the three R's for a long time: reduce, reuse. Nobody talks about those because there's no money in that. So the corporate state is not going to tell people that they should reduce consumption because that would cut into their profits. So they're all about the third R, the one that doesn't make any sense but makes some people a little bit of money.
Well, is there some kind of an industry going here? Because whenever there's a great scam throughout history, there seems to be usually a massive clique involved, creaming it, you know, off the top, off of everybody else's ignorance, more or less.
Well, I think at the level of civilization, and especially industrial civilization, the whole thing is unsustainable, and the outcome is to produce a lot of money for a few people and depauperate the rest. So Paul Ehrlich and Ann Ehrlich, in their book One with Nineveh, written maybe 12 years ago now, described the American system of industrial economy, of capitalism, as capitalism for the poor, socialism for the rich. The rich always get bailed out. The poor never get bailed up. So we have grinding capitalism for the poor. You know, Leonard Cohen sang about this a long time ago. Everybody knows the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls their fingers crossed. Right? So everybody knows the fight is fixed. Poor stay poor and the rich get rich. So it's been going along like that for a long time. Is it all by design? Well, I don't know. If so, that design goes back a few hundred years, or arguably a few thousand years, if one include all civilizations, since the first civilizations arose. Certainly there are people who have taken advantage of the system and have landed themselves in the sweet spots. And so here I'm thinking about certain politicians and certain bankers and banksters and, you know, the people who are deriving a huge amount of monetary gain from the work of the 99.9%.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that in any way indicative that psychopaths are actually in control of society at the moment because they crave power and control and find their way into those positions where they have lots of it?
Absolutely. There's the whole system. If you wanted to design a system that would maximally benefit the sociopaths, you couldn't have done any better than the system we have now.
Which would lead me to believe that they designed the system.
Well, it could be. You know, it could be that they had this in mind, that at least certain people had this in mind. But, you know, it's been this way since the first civilization arose a few thousand years ago.
Sumeria.
Right. And actually, in a relatively short period of time, as the climate warmed, coming out of the Pleistocene and into the Holocene, civilizations arose in several places simultaneously on various continents. So, yes, we know... Probably the first one was Sumeria, or among the first ones was Sumeria, but there was a lot going on in a period less than 1,000 years long. Yes, we had civilizations arise a long time ago, and throughout history, those civilizations have benefited a few at the expense of a whole bunch of worker bees. So there's really nothing new about the current industrial civilization, except that it's accelerated, and it looks like at this point this is the worst of all civilizations, the least sustainable of all civilizations, and it's the one most likely to collapse in a relatively short period of time, while benefiting those who are pulling the levers of industry all the way down.
Is therefore your conclusion that they're purposely trying to crash the world civilization so that most people will die and they'll be able to then seize control of the entirety of the planet, and including all remaining survivors, into their fold in a kind of a dark age forever?
No, that's not what I think at all. I think that they lost control. A guy named Van Jones, who was Barack Obama's green job czar for the 15 minutes he thought that was a good idea. Before Van Jones became part of the Obama administration, he gave a speech September 1st, I believe it was, 2007, in which he said that, and I'm going to paraphrase here. He said, "I've been to Davos, and I've sat with Bill Clinton, and I've sat down with Bill Gates, and I understand how these people think, and I understand that they know they lost control. You think they haven't put peak oil into Google and figured out what that means in terms of collapse of civilization?" He says, they're just at this point, they're just juggling chickens and chainsaws, trying to keep the game going for another day. If they can get through the end of the day, they're considered a major success. So I think they lost control, according to Van Jones, and what he said was believable. After all, this is before he became part of the Obama administration. So he didn't have any big incentive to lie yet. He said that they lost control when oil peaked in 2005, when crude oil peaked. So they're trying to keep the balls in the air. I don't think anybody, not even a sociopath, would want to commit us to human extinction in the near term. But that's where we're headed. And it's not just going to kill 99% of the people on the planet. It's going to kill all of us. And they surely know that, but they figured that out too late, because you don't know about self-reinforcing feedback loops or so-called positive feedbacks until they've already been triggered. Well, we've triggered a couple dozen now, and there's no going back.
Yeah, I think Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org sent me an email about this, that there's some kind of gargantuan methane release happening in the polar regions of the Earth right now, and that has a permanent effect that is only going to grow and get worse to the point where we are facing entire eco-collapse.
Right. What happens in the Arctic does not stay in the Arctic. It's not Vegas. And so when that's the planet's air conditioner. And when we destroy the planet's air conditioner, that's horrific, because then we are headed right to runaway greenhouse. In a very short period of time, the planet is going to heat up beyond the ability to do anything about it. Without that ice, you know, we haven't had an ice-free Arctic ever when human beings were on the planet. Not ever. And we're headed there. If not next September, then the September after that, or maybe the September after that. But in a relatively short period of time, we're going to see an ice-free Arctic. Meanwhile, most mainstream scientists, such as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, are calling for an ice-free Arctic in 2050 or so. There's no way. No way we make it to 2020 with ice in the Arctic in September.
So these recent reports that have been coming out where they have record ice growth and everything in the North Arctic, that's what do you make of that?
Well, that whole series of articles started with a report in the Daily Mail, which is a somewhat less than reputable paper in the UK. And they pointed out correctly that the ice cover in the Arctic had increased substantially from September 2012 to September 2013. Well, there's a reason for that. In September 2012, we saw the lowest ice cover ever recorded in the Arctic. And so when it increased by 30%, I believe it was, from one year to the next, the comparison was to the lowest ice cover ever reported to a significant but relatively small increase in cover within the next year. That ice cover in 2013, although it was considerably higher than it was in 2012, was still about 2 standard deviations lower than the long-term average. They failed to point that part out, that it was still nearly 2 standard deviations lower than the long-term average. So ice cover is still way reduced relative to the long-term average. The trend is down, down, and all down. And yes, there will be these occasional blips.
We're going to have to stop that there. We're coming to break. Be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Guy McPherson. Don't you go anywhere. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated, fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, where everybody has such high rad exposure that they've managed to snap up a part-time job as an eco light bulb, which is good for the environment, especially with the mercury in them. Well, my very special guest is Guy McPherson, who reckons we're all fracked anyway. So what's your assessment of the situation? Do we practice yoga, learn how to kiss our own ass goodbye? Do we just say frack it? You know, everything's going to be screwed up anyway. Let's go and execute a few bankers. It'll be fun. What's your assessment of the situation? We're all going to die anyway. So what do you do about it?
I propose we do the same kinds of things I've been proposing we do for years, which is to pursue a life of excellence. Pursue what you love. Do what you love. You know, we've known since we were 10 or 12 years old that birth is lethal, right? I think most people recognize that they weren't going to live forever before they hit their teenage years. And even if you live a really long time, what does that mean? It means you live to be 90 or 100 years old. That's the blink of an eye. That's almost nothing. I bet you talk to most people who are 90 or 100 years old and on their deathbed, they'll think that it comes down to a few memories, that their lifespan really wasn't all that long. And so You know, regardless of whether we live to be 20 or 30 or 40 or 90, it's a relatively short period of time. Let's try to pursue a life of excellence. Let's try to do the things we love. Let's try to not make the world a worse place for humans and other organisms while we're here. I think Socrates had it right. For him, pursuing a life of excellence meant he was just going to keep asking questions. Keep people answering him his relatively simple questions until they finally killed him for it. But he was pursuing a life of excellence by asking the same six questions over and over and over again. And, you know, I think that's not a bad way to go. I should be so lucky.
Well, I do think that pursuing a life of excellence is in itself its own reward. A life of mediocrity, is in itself its own punishment.
Yes, absolutely. And it seems that that's what this culture would encourage us to do, pushing us to do, is pursue idiocracy and not pursue a life of wisdom, not pursue betterment of ourselves and our situation, but instead pursue a few dollars so that, for the most part, other people can make a whole bunch of money.
It seems a pursuit of pleasure and fun, entertainment, being vain and vacuous and ignorant appears to be the main preoccupation with people these days. Would you agree?
Absolutely. As nearly as I can tell, that's been the approach for 100 years or so. The pursuit of pleasure for pleasure's sake is promoted, encouraged, and completely bought into by the vast majority, at least here in the United States. I can't speak for other places. I've traveled a little bit to other places, but I've lived my entire life here and spent very little time outside of this unbelievably bizarre culture. But certainly here, the television carries the day. You know, it's an Aldous Huxley world we're living in which people are accepting restrictions on their freedom and being convinced that this is a wonderful life. Even though, if you take a look around, the freedom has been missing for a long time. It's been degraded away for such a long time that it's hard to recognize, well, as freedom to me.
Mm-hmm. I think a nice Ashton Kutcher movie could be in the works. You know, dude, where's my freedom?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Well, you know, we have Big Ag controlling our food supply, Big Energy poisoning our water, Big advertising agencies controlling the messages we receive by the thousands every day, corporate media telling us the important news for the day, corporate governments telling us how we should act. Through it all, we think we're free. Freely?
It's a big, giant illusion. And one of my arguments that I raised with somebody the other day surrounding climate change is that the climate change argument and activism has hijacked all forms of environmentalism. Almost no other form of environmentalism exists anymore. There's bugger all media coverage, funding, and support. So if you want to get rid of, say, pesticides, which are known to cause cancer and deformities in babies, there's no funding for you. There's no media coverage for you. And we have the highest cancer rate in human history. Nobody's doing anything about it. And then you look at, well, let's say Fukushima radiation, virtual media blackout there. What's more dangerous for you, carbon dioxide or 10,000 years of radiation? What else have we got here? We've got parabens, which are in all of our products, bisphenol A, alanine, which mimics estrogen, so it gives men a feminizing effect and gives women breast cancer. Then, of course, we've got, say, Agent Orange derivatives, lots of different forms of contaminations, heavy metal contaminations, mercury contamination from these light bulbs seeping into the groundwater. We've got fracking doing it as well. We're in the middle of a massive economic sort of driven environmental nightmare. Yet the only thing that is getting any attention amidst this nightmare is a element that is technically naturally occurring in a lot of cases, that plants need to breathe. I think that if we're going to focus on getting rid of a certain contaminant, we shouldn't be focusing on one of the four building blocks of life, water, sunlight, carbon dioxide and oxygen. Instead, we should be focusing on all these very unnatural, man-made chemical contaminations that really are killing people right at this very second.
Well, let's go even deeper. You're absolutely right, and of course, you only listed a few hundred things that we're doing incorrectly at this point, things that are poised to kill us. But let's go a little deeper and get to the root of the matter. I'm a radical. And most people don't know what that means. It means to get to the root of. And that's why that little mathematical symbol, the square root sign or the cubic root sign, it's called a radical, because it gets to the root. Everything you describe, and let's tack on GMO foods, and dirtying the air with pollution, and fouling the water with pollution, and driving to extinction 200 species a day, and on and on and on the list goes, and going deeper into human population overshoot at the rate of more than 200,000 people a day added to the planet. What's the root of all that and everything you mentioned? It's industrial civilization. Industrial civilization is driving the whole thing, and that's a system that allows for a relatively few people to derive great financial benefit on the backs of a whole bunch of really poor people who are made poorer every single day. So, yes, I would agree that Fukushima represents the greatest threat to humanity right now in the short term. In fact, I would argue that industrial civilization and two of its primary byproducts, nuclear power and global climate change, represent the double bind, the trap that we've already stepped into that will kill us all in the relatively short period. If for example, we keep industrial civilization going, we're headed to 4 degrees C warming in a relatively short period of time. Well, guess what? We've never had human beings on the planet with 3.5 C above a baseline. If we terminate industrial civilization in a short enough period of time to stop runaway greenhouse, then we trigger the catastrophic meltdown of more than 400 nuclear power plants around the world. Think Fukushima to the 100th power. That's going to be inconvenient.
Well, that's an inconvenient truth right there. And speaking of which, have there not been articles or climate change advocates who have said that nuclear power is going to save the world from climate change by annihilating us all with deadly radiation?
Absolutely, and one of the most famous climate scientists in the world, James Hansen, who recently retired from NASA, is promoting nuclear power. I think it's absolutely absurd promoting a quote, energy source that, like the other fossil fuels, depends on a finite material. You know, we know that there's finite amounts of uranium and plutonium, and that we have never figured out what to do with the waste. We've never figured out how to deal with it. And that plutonium sits around for, you know, a few hundred thousand years and is extremely toxic to humans and other animals that whole time. Who thought that was a good idea? It's a terrible idea. It's always been a terrible idea. And to think, to feed our addiction to electricity with nuclear power while claiming that runaway climate change is a prospective problem is absurd. For one thing, building the cooling towers for nuclear power plants generates so much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere that nuclear power plants don't become carbon neutral for 20 years or so, at which point it's time to start shutting them down because of safety concerns. So nuclear is not a carbon-friendly approach. It's a terrible idea.
Do you believe that Agenda 21 will save us from all of this by exterminating the population, more or less, forcing everybody off the land into smart growth cells where they'll be chipped and heavily monitored, and if anybody says anything against the government of the day, they could just get their chip turned off and they can't identify themselves or buy food?
Well, I don't claim to be an expert on Agenda 21. I think that the so-called powers that be, the banksters who have been running this country and other civilized countries for a long time, lost control. I think they lost control when oil peaked, and that they're scrambling now. But things are breaking down. You look at what is happening in the Middle East. You look at the Occupy movement. You look at Idle No More. Things are breaking down, and the ability of the police state to surveil and control its populace is declining. So things are breaking down on every front. They're breaking down at the level of the ecosystem, at the level of civilization. The response to the decay of civilization, to the power of the corporate state, the response is to ratchet up the power. And so now we see, you know, police departments all over this country receiving free or at nominal charge all kinds of high-tech military equipment from the Pentagon. So the Pentagon is essentially giving away these devices that better serve to herd the masses, to keep them all lined up in a row and behaving properly. Well, they lost control. Plain and simple. Consider, for example, if we wanted to impose martial law in the United States. Well, as I understand it, there's about enough military to control the people in Manhattan. You know, maybe they can control somewhere between 10 and 30 million people. What are they going to do with the other 300 million of us? I don't think that's a viable option at the level of the country.
It depends. Well, I don't know, because a lot of people will say this, but there are shockingly large amounts of classified technologies that we don't even know about to a large degree. So you never know. Maybe they only want to control about 30 million of the population. That's like, what, 1% of the population? And maybe they'll just... there's a weapon called Scalar. Have you heard of Scalar?
I have not, no.
It's a... It's a frequency kind of sound weapon, I believe. But basically, what it does is it can send a harmonic tremor, kind of like an EM pulse. But instead of disabling electrical systems, you can disable things specifically, particularly bioelectric rhythms. So you could target a city, put its pulse on, and then you could either have the pulse set to disable all bioelectric rhythms, so every human would die, or you could even target it even more specifically, like all of those with black skin would die, because everybody's got a particular frequency that your heart beats at and your brain waves function at, and they can apparently attune this technology to target specified individuals or entire populations, even specific races, particular colors of eyes and things like that. On top of that, we have what are known as soft kill weapons, you know, vaccine virus releases. Apparently that was tried in Austria. What was her name? Jane Burgermeister exposed this a number of years ago, because there was a shipment of vaccines in from, I think, Baxter's International that was contaminated with a bird flu virus. And as a result of this contamination, it became very clear that there was an agenda at play, because in order to have a virus... a vaccine material of that quantity contaminated in such a way, there's something like 30 to 50 different security checks and protocols that have to fail simultaneously in order for that to even become a possibility. So if you add in bioweapons, censored technology, they don't really need boots on the streets in order to control people. Add on to that psychotronic weaponry, which can actually control people's thoughts and actions, and other classified technologies that some whistleblowers are coming out and talking about. It's, you know, the answer is, I don't know. We'll be right back after the break with Guy McPherson.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly Zeke parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people that keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about a gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery, broadcasting directly into the soft tissues of your brain and projecting images of terror and fear and scumbaggery. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of madness and chaos and our subsequent extermination, if you lose a sense of humor, you'll go frickin' nuts. And my very special guest is Guy McPherson. And we were talking over the break about how it was a number of years ago that the Gulf of Mexico oil spill happened. And that kind of got me bolt up outright of bed. And I was like, you know what? I think the Bible prophecy about a third in the life of the oceans is going to die is starting to come true. And when that's starting to come true and it's happening right in front of your eyes and you're still working for some scumbag corporation and you're still trying to make money to make ends meet, you kind of think to yourself, this doesn't fucking matter anymore. I'm going to quit my job. I've got to start exposing scumbaggery and doing what I want to do with my life full time, because I'll never get another chance at this. And this is part of the embodying philosophy of my life, is that, well, I'm gonna get exterminated or probably, I don't know, I'll be found in a sack on the side of the road, head cut off, arms and legs shorn off as well, and the sack will be neatly tied with a bow, found in a ditch, and it will be ruled a suicide. All right, that's as basically as I assess the situation of anybody who actually tells the truth in a society full of lies, deception, and scumbaggery. That's my assumption. And that's why I'm doing this, because I actually like the idea of being killed with a neat little bow wrapped around me. You know, it'll be nice. It'll be fabulous. It'll almost be like a perfect justification for my very existence, that somebody actually has to kill me and in order to subvert everything that I stand for in order to beat me. Maybe
well,
that's
there's
a
no question
dark.
That Socrates became quite well known, and in part because he was killed, because he kept asking those hard questions. You know, you brought up a lot of issues right before we went to the break, and it brings to mind there are a lot of things that are going on, and we often don't know what many of those things are, what underlies them. And we don't have a lot of control over a whole bunch of those. So what I try to focus on is the phenomena that I do have some control over. So what I do is encourage people to secure clean water and grow healthy food and maintain their body temperature and develop a decent and loving human community, because those are the attributes human beings have depended upon to thrive, not merely survive, throughout the first 2 million years of the human experience. And if we leave the corporate government or the corporate media or the corporations generally in charge of any of those, we're letting our own freedom slip away. So let's not get bogged down in a bunch of phenomena over which we have absolutely no control, and instead work on the things that can make our own lives better, as well as improving the lives of the people and other organisms around us.
I think you're right, because anxiety is what happens when you're worried about what's coming around the corner that you can't do anything about. Anxiety and fear prevent the brain from working properly and prevents you from clear thinking processes, whereas solving problems that are right in front of you, that you can actually solve, gives you personal empowerment, gives you confidence, not only, it shows actual benefit. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen out there, if you're stressing out or you're anxious about something, ask yourself this question. Can I do anything about it? Is my anxiety actually improving the situation? And is there something else I could be doing where I'll actually accomplish something instead? What do you think, Guy?
Yes, absolutely. Take control over your own situation, you know. I am an anarchist, and I promote agrarian anarchy. Anarchy is not chaos. Anarchy is the absence of rulers. Chaos is the absence of rules. And I promote and practice agrarian anarchy in the same sense that Henry David Thoreau did. And for me, what that means is taking responsibility for myself and for the well-being of myself and for my neighbors, human and otherwise. That's what anarchy is. Anarchy is not capitulating to the government, not capitulating to corporations, not allowing other people to exert control over my existence and therefore impinge upon my freedom and the freedom of my human neighbors and my non-human neighbors. So I'm a huge fan of having no rulers. We still have rules, and those rules are characterized by decency, by freedom, by the
non-initiation of force.
Right, exactly. So let's not force our will onto humans or other organisms. At the current rate, we're forcing our will to the exclusion of a couple hundred species every day. It doesn't seem like a very good approach to me, because at some point one of those species becomes us.
I thought it was like 20,000 a year or something even worse, 200 a day, but I could be wrong. I'm not familiar with the stats on that scenario. And it occurred to me that it's not just, changes in the environment and temperature and so on and so forth that's causing that mass extermination. It's purposeful contamination of the environment with unnatural chemicals and hazardous waste and things of that nature, which must be contributing massively. I believe, what was it? Was it DDT or one of the other Monsanto evil pesticides or something of that nature? Trade winds blow it north, and now allegedly the Arctic is one of the most DDT contaminated regions on the planet. And it blows it up there, and then it doesn't come back down.
Right. I mean, we're doing so many things, and almost all of them we're doing wrong. Right, so this is one of the primary reasons I promote resistance against this omnicidal, overwhelming culture. The dominant culture is responsible for so many ills and so little going well that I promote resistance against that culture at almost every level. How could we not do that? Why would we not do that? It seems sheer lunacy to me that we capitulate to corporations, to corporate governments, to corporate media, that we let them exert control over our lives.
Is it because we've been taught by them and trained by them? I think the Jesuits actually had it down correctly. Don't you think that they've had us all since we were yay big in their public schooling system? And now we are merely the adults that they made us.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a reason the public school system works the way it does. It was designed that way.
There was, I think it was Jordan Maxwell, who said that the government doesn't want your children to be educated, okay? If there was something wrong with the education system, they would change it, but they're not changing it, are they? They're only making it worse. Have a look at the test scores for Americans today, and they're what, like 50th? They're like the 50th out of 200 plus countries, okay, in terms of education. So unbelievably dumb that it's not even funny. And I talk to a lot of Americans, and they're intelligent ones, heads in their hand, hoping that the next person that they run into that they have a conversation with isn't one of these mindless slave scum, right? It's almost like trying to avoid a plague of stupidity while walking around your own frickin' homeland. Have you ever had that sensation?
Yes, and you know, when I point out to people that the education system is working the way it was designed, they give me a funny look. Oh, surely you can't mean that. You must be some sort of conspiracy theorist. Well, let's go back to an 1888 report of the United States Senate, the Committee on Education. And we can summarize that report in a single sentence. Quote, "We believe that education is one of the principal causes of discontent of late years manifesting itself among the laboring classes," end quote. In other words, education is making people too smart, smart enough that they were questioning the system in which they were embedded. So away went the private education system, and immediately was implemented the public education system, which has this remarkably restraining set of standards, which become more and more constraining over time. And so now we have teachers spending hours of their day every day preparing reports, daily reports, to be sent to the parents indicating whether their children are behaving well or not. So they spend a significant proportion of their time in this country reporting on how well-behaved the students are instead of educating the students. Not that I would necessarily want them to be educated in the way that the system is designed to educate them.
It's funny you should mention that, because you know how the older generations always say, well, back in my day, we were never that bad, and so on and so forth. Well, it turns out that the rates of drink driving among teenagers, violence, crimes, so on and so forth, are actually really declining quite sharply in New Zealand. So, in a way, you're correct. We are filtering out these behavioural problems whilst at the same time filtering out any education or ability to fight a system that doesn't have your best interests at heart. And I think that's public school in a nutshell. We'll be right back after the break. Sit down, shut up, learn what I'm telling you. We'll be right back.